more hidden underneath.
Okay.
Going to open the meeting of the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. First thing I'm going to do is open a work session for the purpose of sending House Bills 2081 and 2228 to another committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, discussion.
I'm not going to vote to move 2081 to another committee, Mr. Chair.
Let's see which one of those.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I believe this committee, with your leadership, has every bit of ability to handle anything under this bill or this relating clause right here in this committee.
So, just to confirm, this is the bill that Representative Roblin, Boquist, and I, everybody unanimously agreed with the bill. It would be completely ready to go. It has to do with voluntary transfer of development rights between parties, and it's essentially an answer to the Big Look Task Force, and so that's why we're sending it over there, so we could hold it in.
To who?
Land Use Committee. Sir, you don't have to. That's the history.
We have a pretty good sense that wherever it goes, it's going to be okay. So,
well, I think it's okay right here.
Okay, that's fine.
Is it
further? Did I already open the work session all the way?
No.
Okay. Further discussion. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that point, having very little experience in this, I'm just asking those that know. I'm used to sending things to financially related committees, right. Ways and Means, Revenue. Why is it often that you discuss the guts of a bill, the substance of a bill in other committees?
Well, yeah. I think that if it got here because it was one of our interim bills, but it's really non-topical. And basically what happened was we thought we'd be doing land use in this committee. And we did it last session. So we worked it the entire interim thinking it would come here. And then the Speaker's office assigned it here, I think, because it says House Interim Committee on Ag and Natural Resources. Well, then they created a land use they created a land use committee, too. And I said, hey, I'd still like to have it here. Let's work on it. And as we've been talking in the Land Use Committee, it's clear that one of the things that people do want to do is have some voluntary system to reward people who want to conserve farmland, but also give some cash flow. To give some cash flow to them, but help expedite some development in other places. And so it's a voluntary system either side. We are having problems with the Big Look Task Force recommendations, and that problem is no one at all seems to support them of any type at all.
Other than that, they're great.
Right, yeah. that's a small problem. At least the key ones. So we're trying to find some way to answer them. I at least think this is one of the ways to be responsive to Big Look. So I think land use is probably where it should have been assigned in terms of the actual guts of it. And because we're the interim committee who put it in there, we ended up getting it. Others can feel free to differ. It's
well,
not a huge issue.
In response to that point, and then I'll let others speak for a second here, I'd say, despite my belief that it's easier in this state to talk about religion and sex than land use, I think this committee is capable of discussing this under your leadership, and I would up the representative from Happy Valley's comment. I think we could handle any bill.
Amen.
Let alone the ones that are on this list.
Representative Krieger?
Mr. Chair, of the two parties that are always involved in this, one of those two parties is a natural resource-based land, ag, timber. That's what this committee is. So it is the constituent base of this committee. I think that is representing this committee better than it is over there. The last couple land use committees that I've seen in this building, I wasn't a bit impressed what came out of there last time.
So
became 49. I mean, I don't have any confidence in that over there at all.
It doesn't. It's fine. I mean, if we want to do answer to Big Look, we'll just amend the same language into that bill.
Yeah, both of us
it's fine. It's not a huge deal. Oh, do you want to talk? We're not going to do anything with this now. It's just going to stay here.
Okay. I was okay with wherever we send it. I think we did a good job during the interim. I felt really comfortable with it. We got a lot of consensus people in it. And if it makes them feel good to have a good bill, I'd feel really happy with moving it. So I'll do whatever you want, Chair.
We'll just leave it here. Yeah. Senator Boquist may come wanting a hearing on his bill, but that's fine. We'll have it here then.
It's his fault he left the House.
That's the answer.
Okay, let's see. How about 2228? Everyone feel the same way about that one?
Yeah, close the list.
It's basically
I think
the
I opened
same.
Them on hold.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's also a TDR bill. It's actually controversial, though.
It is.
Yeah. So if you want to have it here, let's do it.
Yes,
all right, then.
I prefer that, Mr.
Chairman. Let's close our work session on S. Bill 2081 and 2228.
They got her done.
Told ya.
Representative Cowan, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2737. Sorry, a public hearing. It'd be hard to open a work session without having a public hearing first.
Why don't we transfer that one?
Yeah. Well, I thought that was the one you
That's
were talking about.
That's a good idea. Yeah, we could transfer this one.
I thought that was the
her committee.
I thought that was the one you didn't want to lose. That's fine. No,
sorry,
no,
Mr. Chairman, for not being clear.
I should learn bill numbers, not topics at some level.
Does this one have a subsequent referral?
Oh, it's got to, I would guess.
Yes, it does.
It shouldn't.
Revenue? Oh, Ways and Means. So we're just having a public hearing today, and I'm going to open it all the way on 2737.
2737?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, you could make that a possible work session if you'd like as
I'm
well.
We've got to talk to a few of my friends around here. Welcome, Representative Cowan.
Thank you,
Chair. She's another Land Use Committee member who's really happy we didn't just send that bill over there.
I'm not sure if I'm offended by the suggestions that my Land Use Committee couldn't handle it, or pleased. I'm not, but anyway, that's not what I'm
You couldn't hear it from down there, but he said present company accepted. I heard
that. Well, after we pass her bill out, then she'll tell you what she thinks.
I think she's going to tell us what she thinks right now.
Welcome.
Do you have your committee ready to go?
I don't know, but let's try it.
It'll ever be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and distinguished members of the committee. For the record, I am Jean Cowan. In my current life, I represent House District 10 in the good House of Representatives. In my former life, I was a Lincoln County Commissioner for 12 years. Hence the reason I'm here today to introduce you to Lincoln County Surveyor Tom Hamilton and others who are interested in House Bill 2737. I think all I would like to do is give you a little bit of reassurance, and I'm actually a bit surprised about the subsequent referrals on this bill because this isn't a state general fund issue at all. The Corner Preservation Fund is a fee that's levied by counties for this particular process that the surveyors will explain to you much better than I. The challenge is that this is one of those kind of...
I apologize. There is no way subsequent Ways and Means referral. That was a different bill we were looking at. So that
well, good. I'm already right. There's one for one so far. Okay.
I apologize.
Terrific. Thank you. I'm feeling much better about it. But it's one of those kind of anomalies where there's a set amount in statute, and those are difficult to deal with, whereas the process really should take place within the county structure as the county governing board goes through their whole fee structure periodically. And that's why I decided to come today and just sort of let you know what we did in Lincoln County to give you an idea of how this works at the county level. In my probably a couple of years during the time in my early years as a commissioner, we would have occasions when some fee throughout the whole structure, and remember many things within local government run on a fee-based support system, you charge for the service that you supply, and they would have been neglected for a number of years, and then once every 10 years or so something pops up and you have this huge percentage increase when you deal with things in not a timely manner. So we agreed as a group that we would review all of the fees that the county charges on an annual basis. And across the board in every department in Lincoln County, there is a window of opportunity to review their fee schedule at a certain time of the year, and then that whole thing comes forward as a package to the board. Sometimes people see that there are things that they aren't doing or don't cost that much. They take one off, they reduce them. Other times they try to keep up on an annual basis with the actual cost of doing business. But the surveyors are limited in their ability to do that. But this one, because we have this statute that says it will be $10, and that's what they want to talk to you about today, is simply taking that amount out of statute so that it will work well with the county processes just like everything else does. So if you have any specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but I would really like you to hear from our county surveyors.
Any questions for our colleague?
I do have a question, but I am willing to wait until we hear it.
All right. We'll let you get back to your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Not here at the moment. We may have a colleague join us at some point, but in the meantime, let's start with Tom Hamilton and Chuck Pearson. Do you want to come up together?
I have some printed material. Do you?
Now, my former life is about to come.
The committee administrator.
Good morning. I'm Tom Hamilton. I'm here this morning representing the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors, and also Lincoln County as the county surveyor. So essentially, Gene laid it out fairly well. I think it was. Well, let me back up so I follow what the printed material I'm giving you. When Oregon became a state, one of the conditions of statehood from the federal government was they were required to maintain the original survey system, the section corners, quarter corners. That was a pretty easy deal. They wanted to be a state pretty bad. We wanted to be a state, so they said, sure, we'll do that. And then as the counties became counties, the state said, they got county surveyors, we'll let them do that chore. And from that time until 1985, there was never any money appropriated for the county surveyors to do the work they were had this mandate to do. If you look in ORS 209.070 sub 5 and 6, it says the county surveyor shall, but there was never any money. So in 1985, we came to this Salem here, and we asked for a funding mechanism, which passed through and became law in, was it 203.148. Yeah, where we got a fee based on recordings in the clerk's office. If you make a recording in the clerk's office in the deed section, they get charged a fee, $10 currently. That was set in 1985, and it was capped then, and for 24 years, that's worked pretty good. But if the people, the economics people I talk to are right, they tell me a $10 bill in 1985 is worth less than $4 today. So if I'm going to continue doing the work that the statute says I'm supposed to do, something has to change. So we're here today simply asking to remove the cap of $10 and to allow each individual county to set the fee of whatever they think it is. Now, there's a huge range across the state. There are counties that have none. No corner preservation fee. There are some that charge far less than the max, but for me in my county, it's been $10, and it's been $10. I think we started originally at $5, and in a few years we had bumped up to $10. And it's been that way for a long time now, but the inflation rate is simply eating us alive. I'm currently cutting my budget at least 25%, and I'm still in a deficit spending situation. Through very conservative management, I managed to build a small reserve so that when these bad times come, I'd be able to run a program. But I've been in a deficit spending situation now for 2 years, and I can't go on. So I'm here today asking you, just remove the cap, please. Let the county commissioners, through the public hearing process, set the fee, whatever it should be, and then I'll have to be in front of another body somewhere like this, asking to, here's my program, please support it. So that's my testimony. I'd be answer any questions if you like. I'll try to answer them.
Mr. Pearson here is my constituent. Lives in the happiest town in the city, in the state, Happy Valley, because they're so happy with that great representation they get, right, Mr. Pearson? Anyway,
yes, sir.
He came to my office the other day, and I said, yeah, George Washington, and I think he said Abraham Lincoln was surveyors, and he reminded me that Thomas Jefferson was, too. And I know you're not a bunch of wild and crazy tax and spender types. You're pretty conservative in general, I think. And this is really an important issue. It's important to all landowners in this state. And as my friend here said earlier, land use is a very interesting topic in this building. And we do need to know where these property lines are, and every single property owner in the state benefits from your work. I don't know who signed up to talk, but there is some skittishness about a reluctance to just remove the cap and just hand it over to the good county commissioners who are diligent in their work. I think if we had some idea about what a range we were talking about that brought in enough money for you to do your work, it would remove some of that concern about increasing fees. I think you're right. I believe you. I think you need more money. I believe the comment that you need more money to do this important work, and I'm willing to do that. But I think there's also some people in the room that are concerned about just taking the cap off and saying, here you go. So if you want to just respond to that, I'd like to hear that.
Chair Clem, Representative Schaffler, my name is Chuck Pearson. I'm the Clackamas County Surveyor, and I also am representing the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors. And just for information, the Association of Oregon Counties has voted to support this bill. To answer your question, Representative Schaffler, right now the $10 that was assessed in 1985 is worth $4.84, I believe. In order to get to where we were in 1985, we would have to have the fee set at $20 if we wanted to get that far. Most of us have been diligent in our expenses. Almost all of us have established some sort of a reserve. We are rapidly spending that reserve in my county without any change. If we continue at the rate we're spending with the revenue that we're getting, at the beginning of fiscal year 2010-2011, I am out of money. I'm flat broke, zero. I shut my program down. There's nothing left. So I hope that answers your question. 20 would certainly help. It would get us back where we were if you wanted to set a cap, which has been discussed. In fact, is we had originally approved a cap of $25, and we were pushing forward that on the Senate side, and the senator, after consideration, declined to introduce the bill at that. And we were told that coming into the session in this particular economic times with a 150% increase in a fee cap wouldn't be too well looked upon. I would be happy with either way. I would be happy with increasing the fee cap or just letting the Board of Commissioners do the job. I think all of my other fees are set by the Board of Commissioners. I have survey filing fees. I have plat review fees. I've got affidavit fees. I've got lots and lots and lots of fees that are set by the Board of County Commissioners without any of the concerns that I've heard raised about the board's going to take the money and do something else with it.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm just going to get Representative Cowan back up, too.
Okay, right.
You want to add on to that question before we go to the next one?
I would love
to. Please.
Thank you. Chair Clem, Representative Schaffler, Gene Cowan, for the record. I don't remember off of the top of my head how many fees there were on the whole packet of fees that we review on an annual basis at the county level. I'm sure it's in the hundreds. I don't want to guess an amount. It ranges in planning department, health and human services, everything that the breadth of county government, local government does. I don't think the legislature has the time, energy, or should have the inclination to try to set each of those things in statute and then figure out when each one of them should be adjusted. So my response to that particular question is I think this is inappropriate to be in statute in a specific amount in the first place, and that's the reason I supported these folks and brought this bill forward. And I think you really want to think about that, whether or not we really want, as a legislature, to have to step back and look at what our local government's fee structures are in order that they are able to function.
Thank you.
Representative Wingard.
Gentlemen, just tell me, help me understand how the fee is assessed. I'm looking at your attachment B, and in some cases you don't necessarily have property that has four corners. You have, I see a Samuel Miller property here as an example. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 2, 4, 6, 8. 8 corners on that. So would that be currently 10 times 8
to have
that surveyed, or how does that work?
Okay.
Chair Clem, Representative Wingard, Chuck Pearson again. The example on attachment B is this is a typical township. If you look at example, the first example,
right,
these are all the townships in Clackamas County, and I've highlighted in yellow the one that we're looking at.
Right.
I just picked section 22 there, and these are the public land corners that the county surveyor is responsible to maintain. In section 22, there are 8 section corners and quarter corners. The blocks in red are what we call donation land claims that were originally set by the federal government because people were residing in Oregon and they knew where their property was before the government surveyors came in. So they set the corners to represent the land that they were already homesteading, and those corners are also the responsibility of the county surveyor's office. For the record, we have 6,400 corners such as this in Clackamas County. 2,200 of those are in the U.S. Forest Service. We don't worry too much about those. And the other 4,200, I reestablished probably at this time 1,200 of them. There's a lot of work to be done. If we don't do them, people's property is literally in danger of, I mean, the property's still going to be there, but knowing where their boundaries are is very difficult. The lawsuits go up, they go down as the corners are set or not set.
So I've got a couple of questions, too, and then Representative Schaffer, then back to Representative Wingard. So essentially, I think what you're describing would happen is if the fee isn't changed because of the loss of purchasing power, you wouldn't have enough money to function. So then the options are your county commissioners could basically pay for your program with some other source of money and essentially subsidize your program with general taxpayer funds or something rather than the user who's asking you to do the work. Is that an option that's on the table, basically?
Chair Clem, there hasn't been an active program in Clackamas County for at least 30 years.
That has what?
Has not been an active public land corner remonumentation program for at least 30 years. The funding for discretionary things, as you know, dries up very, very quickly, and we have no discretionary funds. Many counties...
So it's just 1 second. Is the answer no? I don't understand your point, actually.
Well, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Tom Hamilton again from Lincoln County. I think maybe let me try to answer your question and yours here together. That's why in my written testimony I gave you some dates there. You can see from the time the federal government said Oregon was responsible for the system they gave to us so we could convey property. And they gave the state no money to do it. And then when the states gave the responsibility to the
county surveyors or the county, they gave them no money to do it. So from the time the counties became counties, which are different dates across Oregon, until 1985, there was no money. So there's never been money in the county general funds to pay for that.
If I could just, again, please, the county commissioners can't vote to spend money on this out of their general funds?
They
you're
could.
Saying they don't?
They could, but there has not been any from 1980 or from 1859 until 1985.
Okay.
There was no funding mechanism. 1985 was the first time
that they could vote from the general fund to do it,
they
which
could.
Is a funding mechanism. I'm not disputing.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to get us some facts. I'm trying to understand, is there no way this could be paid for other than this fee, basically? And if you're telling me politically, yes, but technically, no, I can totally accept that. I'm just
Mr.
trying
Chair.
To get it to the, some information here. Thank you.
Chair Clem. Gene Cowan, there is a reality. Yes, technically, county general fund money could be allocated to this. Is it going to be? No.
Okay,
and
thank you.
Many, many of the programs do need to be fee-supported in order for them to continue, and that's just exactly what you said, that then you have the owners who have an interest in this participating in the cost of making it happen.
So one other question, I'm going to go here. Donation Land Claims Act, you said Donation Land Claims, were there like the 40 acres under the Donation Land Claims Act that Thomas Jefferson Clem got in 1850?
Chair Clem, Chuck Pearson again. The Donation Land Claim Act, I believe, came about in the 1860s, and it gave... It had different iterations, but basically it would give 160 acres to a single man. Women were not allowed, I'm sorry to say. Or
we know that.
Or 320 acres to a married couple. And sometimes those figures would change. And because the land was already settled and not part of a regular survey established by the government, they had to create these special little parcels, and that's what we call the donation land claims.
Yeah, that's right. My guy got flooded out in 1860, went back, got married, came back, then got 40 acres somehow for, I think, free under the Donation Land Claims mm-hmm. Act. I think maybe that one was in 1870. Sorry for the history. I'm just curious. I read it in my genealogy. Representative Schaffler. Then Winger, then over to Roebuck.
My dad was born on a farm in Minnesota where the deed had Abraham Lincoln's signature on it. Now, he didn't sign it. They had a bunch of staffers in the White House signing these, putting A. Lincoln on there.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm going to get yes to this bill, but we're going to have to put some kind of cap on it. If it's 2025, I know you need the money. I want you to have the money. I want you to do this important work, and you're going to continue to diligently do this important work. As far as representative, things that don't belong in the statute, I couldn't agree more. There's all kinds of things in that statute right over there that I would pull out right now, yank out by the hair, and throw it in the garbage. But that's not what's before us, and I don't see it happening now. And I will also agree and sympathize with the fact that counties don't have any more money to do anything than they're already doing. They don't, and it's through no fault of their own, for the most part. So I definitely, in this time, very sympathetic with that. But I think I can get to yes on this bill, but we're going to have to do a slight amendment, I believe.
Representative Winger, and then we'll go back to Roebuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to understand, now that I understand, for instance, in Clackamas County's case, this would be a program that would restart. I just want to understand from a landowner's point of view how the fee is assessed. So you come through to assess the public corners, and if my land has the public corner on, then you assess me a fee for that? Or, I mean, I guess I'm wondering who's paying the fee and when?
Tom Hamilton again from Lincoln County. I'm not sure if I had it in my printed material to you or not, but what happens is that the fee is charged at the time you make a recording in the clerk's office. So the clerk records all kinds of documents, but if you make a recording, and there's lots of them that happen in the deed section in the clerk's office, then the fee is assessed at that point in time. When they make the recording, then they charge the, whatever the county ordinance says, and they vary across the state. But it is not by a per-corner basis. You as a landowner do not pay for your particular corner. It's just a fee for any document that's recorded in the deeds. I shouldn't say any, but most of the documents that get recorded in the clerk's office in the deed section gets assessed
generally
a fee.
It's the person that takes out the mortgage,
so
the person itself.
I hope, did that answer your question?
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, follow up.
Okay. So if I have bought a home and we're in transaction, then that's when I'm going to face this fee when I go to file. And is it just going to be the $10 fee one time, or could it be because I have multiple documents? There's a lot of filing that goes on. We just had a whole issue over at affordable housing and a fee that was set at $15. But the reality is most people who go into the clerk's office to file on that are going to have an average of four documents that they're going to pay that $15 fee on. So it wasn't really a $15 fee. It was more like a $60 fee.
I don't know about...
First page.
Representative, or Chair Clem, Representative Wingard, the fee is assessed against any instrument recorded in the county clerk's office that conveys an interest in real property. It's tied to real property. If you sell your house and the person that you sold it to records the deed, they will pay the $10. Now, if they do a mortgage, they will also pay the $10. The recordation of documents in Oregon used to be very, very large, and this economic crisis has been coming for some time, not just because of the crisis we have right now. We have an organization called MERS, which is the Mortgage Electronic Registration System. So where they used to take and sell a mortgage from one person bank to another, and we get another $10, they're keeping track of all of that electronically. So our recordings have dropped off significantly and will not go back up. They will go back up as the economy picks up, of course, but they will never achieve the levels that we had once achieved. So we're... My analysis of being out of money in 2010, 2011 was based on facts before the housing crisis that we're in now.
Well, one more follow-up.
Yep, please.
I'm just still not sure I understood. So if I'm buying a home and doing it with a mortgage, then I'm going to pay that fee twice, once for the deed, once for the mortgage? Or are you telling me that the vast majority of homeowners or people who refinance will simply pay this fee one time when they do that?
Chair Clem, Representative Wingard, when I bought my home, I paid $20. I paid two fees, one for the mortgage that I recorded and one for the warranty deed that I got from the developer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I think Representative Robel is next in the queue, then we'll come back to Vice Chair Van Orman.
I just want to state some states, and you can tell me if I'm correct in my assumptions. I mean, part of the problem here, in my opinion, is that we have gone from general fund funding sources for most of our state government to fee-based to get things, and that there was a point when there was a great nexus. This county's collected property tax, and they used part of the property tax that they collected to pay for this particular job. And so when we sorted out things, and that's kind of where their general fund used to come from for the most part. Then we passed ballot measure 5, and that changed how much they could collect. They didn't have control over their source of general fund. But prior to that, the counties had already started doing this fee a little bit before that. But so now we've gone to a fee-based deals to do different kinds of things. And this is a document recording fee. It's just like one of the other document recording fees that we did. But it has a separate place that it goes to, their funding. And the only other part that I get a little uptight with at times when people come in and say, you know, inflation has gone and so forth, I agree with that. But I always go back and say, I know. But when they first started, they probably only charged $5 or $4, so they've already grown 100% in the last number of years. It wasn't the $10 was there to give them some of that leeway. I'm not saying that they haven't reached that point now, because they may very well have. But this is a part of the whole problem that we're having right now with both state and local governments, is that we have a very difficult time doing the things that we're required to do with the resources that we have available. So I don't know the answer to it, and I am...
Two fewer things.
It's frustrating, but I think there was originally, when the state set this apart as one of the county functions, there was a nexus between what the money was coming in from the state to do their jobs and the others to do theirs. So I get frustrated when people say, we were never given any money to do this. Well, most of the property tax went to counties, and this is about property, so it made a sense that it was a county responsibility. Now, we've changed a lot of things in the meantime, but I think there were reasons that we had tax structures the way we kind of made them, sense of them at one time, and they don't make as much sense today just because of those things. Does that sound reasonable to you?
Representative Clem, Chair Clem, Representative Robleman, yes, that's a pretty good analysis of the way things are. One thing I would like to correct, and that is all counties in Oregon have this fee established now. Washington County and Multnomah County, because of the huge volume and of deeds recorded, they are set at less than $10. One county in Southern Oregon, I believe, is set at $5 just because the board wouldn't set it any higher than that. The rest of them have been set at $10 since the fund was established, with the exception of Clackamas County, which did not establish their fund until 1998, okay. And there's political reasons for that.
Yeah.
Well, we know.
There are.
Yes, okay. We know.
Vice Chair Van Orman.
Well,
Schaffler, Van Winger.
One of the problems I'm having is we all want government to be more efficient and run like a business. And for me, in looking at this, the fact that you have to come to the state legislature to ask for this when you are a county and you have county jurisdiction, cool. I find that cumbersome and another layer of government that I'm still trying to understand why it's necessary to do it this way. And I don't think I have a question. I think I have a lot of questions, but I can't figure out which one to ask. But it appears to me that what this is trying to do is to streamline the business of the county in this particular aspect, which is regulated by state statute. And that what we're trying to do, what I think, and Representative Cowan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is to streamline and make this much more efficient and at least allow the county to decide what the traffic will bear to pay for the cost of the service. Is that a fair assessment?
Chair Clem, Representative Van Orman, I think that is a fair assessment. Counties will determine the need for this program and work with their elected officials, their county assessors, to see what kind of a program can be put in place if we can have enough of a fund to make it happen. Counties are different. Their geography is different. Their needs are different. But, yeah, it's just a piece that probably there's an extra chunk of statute that I think is unnecessary.
Thank you.
I think Schaffler and then back over to Wingard.
I really want to get back to why we do this in the first place. And every single home buyer, every single home seller, every single builder, every single developer, every single property owner has a vested interest in knowing where their property line is. As a city councilor, I witnessed some painful things happen where people had purchased what they thought was their property,
okay.
Turned out was not their property. Now, that is a painful thing to go through, and I pray to God I never have to go through that. So I just want to get back to the importance of what you're doing and why you're doing it, and point out this money goes to pay for that service and that service only. This is not going into some general fund where the Multnomah County or Josephine County can go spend their money, this money, wherever they want. This is to pay for a service that is needed by the entire state of Oregon, every person that lives here, every person that owns or sells or develops property. And you, as you just testified, as a public official, so I know you're telling me the truth, that you are running out of the money and the resources to continue to do the job that we demand and need you to do. I just want to get that out there. I want to get back to that. Our fee structure, our tax structure. If we had a bill in here that talked about that bill, I would move to revenue, Mr. Chair.
Chair Clem, Representative Schaffler, it's called the Corner Preservation Fund for a reason.
And in statute, it says shall be used only to pay expenses incurred and authorized by the surveyor in establishment, reestablishing, maintenance of corners of government surveys. That's right. It would be illegal to do anything differently. Representative Winger.
Sir, did I hear you say that Clackamas is not currently does not currently have this program?
Chair Clem, Representative Wingert. No, when I came to Clackamas County in 1998, that's when they established the public land corner program in that county. So we had the unfortunate inability for 13 years to do absolutely nothing.
But they have a program now, though.
We have a program now, and we are diligently doing corners at the present rate. I'm probably looking at somewhere around 30 years to complete the corners that we need to complete. I might add, Chair Clem, that there are other benefits to these corners, and that is a significant benefit is to the county assessment and the GIS departments, because now they know where those properties are, and we provide them with the geodetic coordinates that they need to create all of these maps electronically that they're doing. So we're providing a huge benefit to other programs as a byproduct of what we do.
We have some, for your information, there was a second sheet I missed. We've got three other folks to come testify, John Chandler, Sean Jillians, Erica Hagedorn. So we'll have some more opportunity to explore concerns and things, too. But any more questions for these folks, and we can take care of them now.
If I may, Chair Clem, as I think I mentioned earlier, we did come forward with the proposal was to raise the fixed fee from $10 to $25. We would support that also. Okay. We aren't locked into one or the other. I think it should be taken out, be a local decision, but I understand there are concerns by other people.
Well, let me ask you one question, actually. And that maybe it's just a basic county to state thing I don't really understand, but is it not possible, because this statute exists, to just establish a county-based land corner preservation fund and then start assessing a fee? Or call it something slightly different so you're not in violation of the statute, public land corner maintenance fund, and then assess a fee?
Chair Clem, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that every time that something is put onto the recording, as like a GIS fee or the affordable housing, that I don't know if it's passed or not, and some other fees, those all have been established by the legislature.
I mean, I would almost think that if that isn't the way our system's set up, I'm surprised you're not essentially asking to have the whole statute deleted entirely, and then you just decide what happened. I mean, everything. It's not just the cap. I assume I'm going to have some serious opposition to that concept, but I'm surprised that's not what you're asking for.
Chair Clem,
why would you want any of this?
There is a very good reason, and that is because we do require the money to go into a separate fund that only can be expended as statutory language used to say incurred, and a county came and took money out and used it for another purpose, told the county surveyor, you just incurred the cost. So we changed it to incurred and authorized. So I personally need and want that protection there so that money only goes to that purpose.
So your county commissioner's fund swept you, and you're worried about them doing it again, so please have us protect them.
Chair Clem, it was not my county commissioner.
Okay. As some generic county commissioners might do that someday somewhere. Okay. Oh, and Jean left, too, so she's now going to... I'm going to be in trouble for that one. Former county commissioner.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Winger.
I just want to add one more thing, talking about past lives. In 2001, I was a committee administrator at that time we gave ironic names to House committees, and it was the Government Efficiency Committee. But I seem to remember a bill coming through the committee at that time that raised the fee from $5 to $10. Now, my memory might be fuzzy on that, but if I'm correct, that would mean that it was $5 from 1985 to 2001, and it's been $10 since then. But
Chair Clem, Representative Wingard, there have been two bills the original bill in 1985 and one amendment to that bill. The amendment was in 1987 to place the money into a separate fund and to add the words "and authorized by the county surveyor." The fee was originally established at $10.
Okay, thank you. So I know that
the fee got doubled that year.
It was a bill related to this land preservation corner fund, but it may not have been a fee increase.
Thank you. Sorry for the hard time, gentlemen, but you know, like we like to work a bill here. Why we've only moved two. let's get Erica Hagedor, John Chandler, and Sean Gillies up.
They were so uncontroversial.
Always quality, never quantity.
We have Shoffler's upset that we've moved any. He was going for zero all session.
Chair, I think the Business and Labor Committee's moved 30.
Wow.
It's the leadership of the committee, I'm telling you.
No, it's the care and caution we make in making our bills.
Oh, that how it works?
Close with the other.
All right, that. Eric, I've got you first on the list, but I, you know, whoever wants to. Oh, you're going to let him go, aren't you?
I'll lead off. thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Erica Hagedorn here today on behalf of the Housing Alliance. First of all, I'd like to begin and thank the legislature, now passed through two chambers, for their support of House Bill 2436, which was the document recording fee increase for affordable housing of $15 to the existing $26 document recording fee. That means the recording fee now is $41 charged on most real estate documents. 2436 was the result of 18 months of very intense negotiation between housing advocates and our industry partners, the bankers, home builders, and realtors. During that time, the industry folks came to understand more about the need for affordable housing in Oregon. And on the other side, we learned more about Oregonians' willingness and ability to pay additional recording fees. We felt that with 2436, the $15 was the maximum amount that we could reach to balance the needs of affordable housing and folks' willingness to pay. For that reason, in our negotiation, we feel that any other document recording fee, in addition to the $15 that was approved by the legislature, is something that the Housing Alliance has to oppose. So with that, I can answer any questions, but that was the nature of our historic-type agreement.
And just all the people down the left side of your sheet are the Housing Alliance.
That's right.
So they all oppose this or any others like it.
That's right. As a Housing Alliance, the decision was that we wanted to join our industry partners in passing House Bill 2436, but in that negotiation, we decided that $15 was the most that we could do in document recording fees without somehow tipping the balance between what folks could pay when they're buying a new home or making other transactions.
I was looking for AOC to see if they had to quit the alliance now, but they're not on there, so they're good.
Okay.
Okay, questions for Erica? All right, entertain us, Mr. Chandler.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in opposition to House Bill 2737. At the outset, I'd like to point out to the committee, in case you didn't study this morning's schedule, the Revenue Committee is considering another bill, the number of which escapes me, which would also increase a separate county fee recording of documents. So this issue, as Ms. Hagedorn mentioned, is in play this session. We join with the Housing Alliance, as she mentioned, on 2436 in supporting the $15 increase for affordable housing. We do not support any other increases. There's several reasons for that, and before I get to them, I want to mention a couple of responses to the questions that were asked. This document fee would apply to anything recorded at the county, so not just corners or surveys, but any mortgage, deed, trust deed. There's a whole list of them in the statute that gets filed at the county clerk, and we decided, I think Representative Wingard's recollection is correct, average of 4 filings per real estate transaction. We hope that we'll get back to having real estate transactions in the state at some point in the not-too-distant future. And that does; those fees do start to add up in each case. The second point I want to make is regard to the purchasing power argument that was made. I'll stipulate that inflation has occurred since this $10 fee was instituted. I would also suggest that the number of filings has increased in that same period of time. And so I don't know. I can't do that kind of math in my head. I have no idea what the ratio is, but it's not as simple, to, I don't think, to say that, well, $10 in 1985 is really $4 today, because you'd also, the other part of that equation would be the number of filings, refinances, deeds, everything else that go through the county system. As to our opposition, I talked with Mr. Pearson. I would like to recognize that he did call me and tell me about the bill, tell me the hearing was coming up, and we chatted about it. With regard to a cap or any increase, I mean, for one thing, an unlimited increase makes us very nervous. Simply removing the $10 and saying, go get them, strikes us as bad policy. In regard to the $10 itself, I'm perfectly happy to discuss with the surveyors whether or not they need extra money, but simply the inflation equation or anything else isn't enough to tell me they do. I'd like to see how they're spending the money currently, if they've had reserve funds, what has happened to those reserve funds, if they have not spent, if they spent the reserve funds hanging on to staff at the county, that's not something the private sector is able to do. Maybe there are some discussions about efficiencies at the county level. I understand the problem that counties have. In the hearings on 2436, we were very clear about that. We will be supportive, the home builders will be supportive of anything that helps get counties more money, as Representative Roblin talked about, by changing the tax system fundamentally so that local control in terms of property tax allocations can be restored. That's not in front of you. With regard to fee-for-service type legislation, I think we would want to have the conversation, as we did with the affordable housing people for a year and a half. We wouldn't have to necessarily take a year and a half, but talk with the surveyors about what are you doing with the money now, what needs do you have, is $10.50 the right number? $12 is $13. As far as agreeing to any sort of an amount today, we would not do so. More than happy to continue the conversation. Along with that, however, that conversation would want to include some more protections about making sure this money stays where it was sent. And I understand the statute right now says that it cannot be spent for other things. We all know that not spent for other things may in fact be spent for other things. This body just did that, sort of, with some other sweep funds. The people who paid weren't necessarily aware they're going to be swept or could be swept, but there you were. And I'm not quarreling with what this body did.
We haven't voted yet. We got another hour.
I'm simply observing that sweeping can occur, notwithstanding statutory or other restrictions thereon. The statute on this case does say these funds are dedicated. I will tell you, with regard to another set of dedicated local funds some years ago, we had to go to court to demonstrate that, in fact, the funds were misplaced or misused. We won, but the local government in question had several years' worth of our money's use while we were arguing about that topic. If there's a way to sideboard this, staple it down adequately, I haven't seen it done yet in a way that staples couldn't be worked loose, but if that would be part of the conversation we'd be willing to have as well. Other than that, we think it's a dandy piece of legislation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Be glad
to take any questions.
Just, we've got another one of our colleagues. I'm not sure of his schedule, so I just wanted to see maybe if we could pull Representative Kennemer. He was a former senator, I think, at one point. Back up, Eric, is that okay? Representative Kennemer, would you like to join us?
May I ask Mr. Chandler a question?
Yeah, please. Representative Schaffler.
If this bill doesn't pass, it'll be because our friend Mr. Chandler joined the Sisters of the Road in killing this bill.
That was a question, I think, maybe.
Something about strange bedfellows comes to mind.
Right here.
Never mind.
I didn't know they were so anti-surveyor.
Representative, it's good to see you. I'm wondering if, back when I was a staffer in 95, I seem to remember a performance on the Senate floor around St. Patrick's Day, maybe, and there was a bowler of some kind, green bowler involved. Will we maybe see that again on the House floor at some point? That's the topic of this whole hearing, by the way.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bill Kennemer, for the record, some of the record we're trying to abolish, and some of it we think probably should be continued. You know, those of us who have an Irish grandparent, sometimes it affects us in dramatic ways, and perhaps in the name of diversity or something, we should have at least a little bit of fun around here.
I think so.
So I'm not sure what we're going to do.
Please.
If I may.
Yes, please.
Appreciate coming to speak to you regarding House Bill 2737. As most of you are aware, for the last 12 years, I've served as a county commissioner, Clackamas County. And, our monument preservation program has been a good one. And it's one that actually saves money, because you see, when you have those monuments kept in good repair and you can find them, it means your surveys cost less and you don't spend lots and lots of hours searching for them. And in a county as large as Clackamas County, 1,800 square miles, we have 6,400 of them. And that means you can drive quite a ways to go find them and do the repairs and do all the things that you need to do. Our surveyor has been very aggressive with our program there, but this is a fee that was set, no offense, in 1985, and I think it's time to update it. I like the idea of letting the county set their own. In Clackamas County, we found an enormous problem in fee setting, in that we have the same problem the state has. If you're not careful, you raise fees whenever they come up. Or you don't raise them whenever they come up, but you haphazardly deal with them. One of the things we instituted is an annual review of all of our fees. And trying to, I think, have a record of being judicious about that, because there is a reasonable amount to raise fees, and there's time to do it, and there's a time to hold the line. But this is dedicated revenue. It goes to the one source. It's kept there in that program. You can see how that's doing. I think it's time to step to the plate, and therefore I urge support of the bill.
Any questions for our colleague?
Representative Kenner, thanks for coming. In your time as county commissioner, did you ever see any of this money spent for anything in this fund other than surveying these monuments?
Absolutely not. And our surveyors, well, you already heard, Chuck.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. There's some skittishness in this building about raising fees all the time. We talked about, rather than just leaving it open to the county to put a cap on how high they could go. The surveys were said they would rather have it removed completely, but were willing to work with that. Would you support any kind of amendment like that?
You know, I think when it's so far outdated, it's time to update it, I guess, to half evade your answer or your question. The other side of your, excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Schaffler, I guess the other point that I would say is the problem is that when you put a cap, you usually have set a new number. And it's probably going to go to that cap. And I just think that's the risk. And I like the idea of letting counties adjust it to what is appropriate. Since it's a dedicated fund, it does no good to charge a fortune and hide it. So I think, you know, it's a fee that you're going to have to justify. And it goes to a dedicated fund. So it's not like an open pocketbook or an open credit card that you don't ever have to pay.
Other questions? We still need to hear from Mr. Julians. Representative Van Orme.
I have a question for John. In terms of the fee setting, wouldn't it be easier to go in front of the county commissioners to argue for the fee as opposed to coming here maybe every 5 or 10 years or every 2 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Orman, with regard to what the fee should be, that's absolutely right. I be among the long line of people that say you probably shouldn't be putting fees like this in the statute in the first place.
Okay.
That's both my point I was trying to make earlier, that most of these decisions, as Representative Roland indicated, should be left at the county level. They weren't by virtue of a series of historical incidents that you heard about. We'd be more than happy to go back and let the local governments get more money from the property tax if their voters will support it and pay for the services the voters will support. That's not the world we're in. And with regard to the fees in the statute, again, they're not merely random numbers, or shouldn't be. They should be based on the cost of the service, which, and either removing the cap entirely or increasing it to some other number, should be part of that discussion of what it costs to do that service. The same kind of analysis, because it is in the statute, and probably I suspect the counties would squawk if you give it back to them entirely because they don't have enough resources to cover it as it is. That the discussion, unfortunately, has to occur here. Pending reform of Measure 5 and 50, which I heartily encourage you to do.
Yeah, I didn't realize that's where you guys
keep
were at.
Keep you busy for a day or so.
Yeah. Can we get Mr. Julian's comments on the record? Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Julian's representing Oregon Association of Realtors. Representative Schaffler, I did want to thank you for sponsoring House Bill 2436 for us and the $15 increase that we already had this session. As you've heard from my colleagues, it was a long process. And we did come up with the agreement that $15 was all the market could bear for increasing the document recording fee this session. So we would be extremely concerned with any other increases this session. And unfortunately, I think when the bill originally came in 2007, it sparked ideas for folks that this would be a great revenue source to tack onto this. And as Mr. Chandler mentioned, in the House Revenue Committee, there was a bill this morning. It seems that once we agreed to do something which we think was a very valid purpose and a very noble purpose to support affordable housing, unfortunately now everyone is trying to jump on top of it. And so we're very skittish of that. The one other thing I would mention about the testimony prior from the surveyors is they did mention that they were able to build reserves previously. So to say that this fee is completely outdated and not adequate, I think if they managed to build reserves, I think it was fairly adequate. None of us could have anticipated how far this housing market would drop. I think that's why you're seeing the issue. However, we're all quite hopeful that it rebounds.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was so disappointed to come in the middle of Mr. Chandler's, because it's always...
It was good. Linfield, was it?
Big Bird?
Where'd you get a call in?
Mr. Chair, don't give him another opportunity.
The purple people
George
here.
Fox.
George Fox,
Mr.
Chairman, but they're not happy about that.
Yeah,
so.
he was telling me that something about they couldn't do math well if you graduated from George Fox and you need a calculator, but that kind of catches us up to where you came in.
Thank you.
I'd like to urge the chair and the committee not to move forward to this bill now.
We're in just a public hearing, no work session possibly scheduled, so I promise you that part.
Because of the following. The thing you do have going for you in this bill, Representative Kemmer, is your integrity and your experience as a county commissioner, as well as the previous testifier, my friend, Representative Cowan. However, I'll just do this one time in this committee, but it is my anti-fee harangue for this session.
Let's hear it.
And it's not just, anti-fee, because the hunters pushed way back on that.
Yeah.
If a group like our hunters, who are happy with what they're getting, say they're doing that, in that case, Fish and Wildlife's doing a great job and they would pay for it, I'm listening. So that really kind of set me back on my heels on the fee speech. Here's my point. We all know where this economy is. We don't know how far it's going to drop. And this is not intentional, because I appreciate the testimony by the surveyors. But this is not intentional, but we have, in what in my mind is a kind of ad hoc ways and means system, as all these fee bills, I've sit on four committees, I don't know how many you sit on, come filtering in. They're very important. Everybody has a great line of defense for why they need a cap lifted, why they need another fee. But we, today, will be one of the first times this body makes a significant financial decision for this session. So my plea is, all fee bills, no matter their merit, ought to come, perhaps after, I would say, the April forecast.
I thought you were going to say sign and die, but I didn't
know. Oh, I'm sorry to be generous.
Yeah, thank you.
But I just think I don't like bringing these in willy-nilly, because somebody someplace in our constituency, perhaps rightly, but somebody is going to pay an additional fee. And I don't think, in my district, they can afford it right now. And I would like to be able to say to them, I have a better idea of the bad news I'm going to hand you in terms of cuts and programs before I also add on a couple of other nickel and dimes for these other things. So I'm against it, particularly because of the timing. And I say, let's wait until we get further down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Klum. That raises a question for me, because I thought that the bill was not about... I thought the bill was about who sets the fee. Is it this body, or is it the county? And so that's what I thought this was all about, is where is the fee determined? And so that's why I asked, John, whether it not would be easier for everybody to argue about the fee at the local level in the county rather than coming here.
Mr. Chair,
yeah, please.
Point well taken, but regardless, it isn't going to go down.
No.
It's
well,
go
I agree
up.
With that, my question was really for clarification, Representative Gilliam, so that I understand, because the more we talk about it, the more confused I get.
Okay. On that note, I do want to hear at least one more bill today, so let's get...
I'll be very quick. Yeah, I just want to be clear on the record that John did not go to George Fox University. He was taught by George Fox. And
oh my goodness. Well then. Hello. Thank you, gentlemen. Just to be fair, Chuck, before you there's some sort of confrontation over there. Do you want another 1 minute to just sort of clean up and respond, and then we're going to close the public hearing on this? I hope you come back to our committee. We're good people.
Chair Clem, I try and avoid this whole process if you don't mind. I understand the reticence to raise fees. We don't want the fee raised. We want the county to determine the fee. If the populace of the county cannot bear the cost of it, they have the opportunity to locally go to their county commission and argue that. They don't have to drive to Salem to do it. They're very close. As to the real estate, the Oregon Association of Realtors, I find their comments interesting. They supported the bill in 1985. We laid it out for them. It made sense to them. They said, yes, we need those corners. We need what you're doing to happen. And now I guess they're just opposed to the fee, but perhaps maybe we could just dump the public land corner fee and say we get 5% of their commission by statute. I'd be happy with that.
I don't think they would, but hey, this is a public hearing. You could certainly just say things.
This is a simple thing. This is not about raising fees. There are counties that have actually lowered the fee. Washington County started at 10, went to 8, went to 6. Multnomah County started at 8, and they're down to 5. Their corners are virtually done. They're into a maintenance program, and that's where we all hope to get, is into a maintenance program. Rather than having 3 or 4 survey crews out there, I could have 1 survey crew eventually. But if we don't do this work, if we put it off from 1890 to 1990, and a study we did in Washington County, the original evidence that was available to reestablish these corners went from 60% to 14% of it available. It is constantly getting destroyed by road building, by sewer building, by home construction, new office buildings, you name it. They don't care. Signs that say public land corner, call the county surveyor's office, protected by law. These corners are protected by both state and federal law. They don't care. If we find out who did it, we charge them. But utilities are awful about doing it. So we need to do the work. And if you don't want to give us the means to do it, then I guess you don't want to give us that means.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm not going to do any more Q&A because we've got now another colleague on a different bill and a bill I carried over at least twice already.
Thank you very much.
Trying.
Thank you.
Good.
Sisters of the Road just hate them, sir.
Stay close to hearing us.
He should not have
there's much public
I can check the sign-up sheet.
I thought that might happen, actually. Representative Esquivel. Sal. Representative Esquivel. If you don't mind, I think we're going to get to your other one. We have some folks have been carried over a couple times here on a bill. Is it all right if I just take care of that first? Or yeah, okay. Thank you very much. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2737, exciting one, and open a public hearing on House Bill 2714, which was carried over from
for March 3rd.
Welcome,
colleague.
It's so exciting to be here in front of this committee. I rarely get the opportunity to speak in front of such a distinguished group of fellow legislators and a chair like Representative Klum.
We got that right.
And I want to thank you for hearing this bill, and I'll let Anna introduce herself. She works with us on a Sea Grant fellowship with the Coastal Caucus, so she can maybe add some things to our testimony in a few moments, and I'll let her do that. But for the record, I'm Representative Arnie Roblin from House District 9. This is about a task force, and if you look through it, you'll see that I even took off the per diem expenses and travel expenses for legislators who get appointed to this so that you will have less money. I think it's more, as we've had conversations here, talking about invasive species, one of the places where invasive species is a big problem at the coastal has to do with the transport and ballast water of invasive species and the dumping of those ballasts at different times in waters that are controlled by Oregon and sometimes in waters that are controlled by Oregon and Washington on the Columbia River. And so there are a number of bills that are working on this one. This one basically is a bill to start getting the right information so that we can make good decisions and look at the new technologies that are out there for treating ballast water and other things. And so we are going to have a couple amendments. It turns out that, for one thing, the Invasive Species Council, which we wanted to have a part of this, they pretty much have a place already, and their coordinator's ending here shortly, so they would rather just be taken out because they will be involved in it no matter what. So we'll have a couple of little amendments like that, and Anna can talk a little bit more about that as well. She can actually talk a little bit about the bill, and before we finish, I'll let her talk first, and then any questions we might have answered. So with that, I'll turn it over to Anna so she can tell you who she is. And
hello, my name is Anna Pakenham. I'm the staff for the Oregon Coastal Caucus. Thank you for letting me speak today. So the DEQ approached the Oregon Coastal Caucus with recommendations for how they can better manage invasive species in Oregon. Of these recommendations, Representative Roblin has sponsored one of these, which is 2714. So in Oregon, the annual cost of control of the zebra mussel, for example, is $25.5 million a year. Zebra mussel, as you probably know, was introduced into the Great Lakes through ballast water discharge, and that was really the impetus for these task force to take care or at least work on these issues. The Shipping and Transport of Aquatic Invasive Species Task Force was established in 2007 to continue the work of the Ballast Water Task Force, and their task force will be ending this session, and it was the hope of the bill to continue this task force and the good work that they've done. For the upcoming years, they hope to explore options for more efficient reporting and receiving of ballast water management data. They hope to develop criteria for prioritizing vessel inspection based on high-risk characteristics of arrivals, to develop and implement a voluntary whole husbandry survey for commercial vessels operating in Oregon waters, and also to work on Oregon's Invasive Species Council to clarify interagency uncertainties regarding whole fouling responsibilities and jurisdiction. When the DEQ approached the Coastal Caucus and myself, we made sure that we talked to the Port of Portland, the Invasive Species Council, and tried to just collaborate with the different parties to make sure that everyone was on board with the bill that was being proposed. And because of just the way things happened, they they got their amendments in after the construction of the bill. So the amendments I think that you have in front of you, one is by the DEQ, is to first remove the Portland State University for funding and support. The Portland State University doesn't want to have that responsibility, and they really want to let the DEQ take over that. And then the second is to change the report date that the task force will produce from October 1st to June 1st so that they can allow these changes in budget to be made.
Mr. Chair?
Just so you know, that we don't actually have the amendments printed that, so I'll be scrambling for them. They don't exist yet.
We have them out, but this is what they're going to do. It's just important, I think, for you to know what's happening.
Yeah, no problem.
They haven't come back.
I haven't asked my question yet.
I don't want to talk about my scone, but
sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
We channel each other. It's great.
And then, as Representative mentioned, mentioned that the Oregon Invasive Species Council, because they already have a role in the task force and because they're losing their coordinator position, wishes not to be mentioned in this bill. So.
Is what we think now.
Yeah.
And we are ready to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. The lobbyist for the bar pilots, I believe he was, they wanted a seat on this or be.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Who's going to be appointed to this is my question, and how do you get a designated seat on that?
There is a list that we have provided, so giving us that name is important because that was somebody we could easily add to that when we're doing our other amendments. So if you look at the section, there's a section that talks about the appointments.
I don't know if it was... He was here when we were going to hear it last time, but we carried it over. Speaking of the devil there...
Oh, good.
Entered the room, and
we would love to hear those kinds of things.
Okay, good. Yeah. How do you, may I, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, please.
How and when and who will determine who sits on this task force? That's my question.
I'm trying to remember.
Forgive me for not.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and look at it again, too, because
you can get that.
I'll get that to you.
It's not there.
Because we're not working it today, Mr. Chair.
They're appointed by the Oregon DEQ, but we'll work on making sure that we make the rules come out and figure out how to get the people on, because I really would like to make sure that has those
great
kind of you like the bar pilots. And I'm happy to know they're interested, actually.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Other questions on this one?
I just would say I agree with Representative Schaffler.
Well, they have some unique insights into the stuff that would be helpful, I think.
Do we have a representative of the bar pilots in the room now?
Hello?
Forgive me.
Did you want to testify on this?
Sure.
Are you
good? We're
okay with
any other questions.
Yeah, please, come on up. And then any other questions for these two? You want to ask questions and then keep them here for keep Representative Roblin? Okay, why don't we all stay for a moment if that's great.
Anna likes doing this. She has had. This is her first opportunity to actually testify.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You had to be in front of my committee and me personally, which is the larger issue. I think now, were you from Kansas originally?
Me? Yeah. Port Angeles, Washington.
Washington. Some of us from Coos Bay considered him an invasive species until we got to know him. Now we really like him, but it's, you know, it's just another issue. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, representing the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association. We are the people that bring the Toyotas in and take the wheat out of Oregon ports. We do support this bill. We do support this task force, and we look forward to being considered for membership on the task force representing the maritime community.
It only makes sense. So, yeah.
And Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Schaffler.
Rob, you represent the bar pilots, too?
I do not. The bar pilots are represented by Tom Gallagher. The river pilots are represented by Conkling, Fiscom, McCormick.
Okay. I can't keep everybody straight.
I wonder why.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for this panel?
Well, I would...
Representative Norman.
Thank you, Representative Chair.
That's good. That's fine. That's good enough.
It's been too long a day. Okay. Pardon me while I collect myself here. Again, I wanted to elaborate on my support of what Representative Schaffler was saying, is that some of the other bills that I have seen have identified who would be on the task force. And I thought I heard you say, Representative Roblin, that would be one of the things that you would be doing.
Actually, I got it confused with a different bill that we just were talking about in Coastal Caucus earlier, in which we do outline exactly who they are. On this one, we didn't know that was important, but we will make sure that as we talk to DEQ and others that we make sure these people are done. Or if we aren't getting where we need to, we will put them in. So we'll talk to them and make that happen.
Follow-up.
Yep.
So you're telling me that we will get something that will identify who will be on this task force?
Currently, it is not in this piece of legislation, and
that's
it is
what
up to the DEQ. So what we will do is have our conversations with them and make sure that they understand if they're going to put some rules forward to who is going to be on there, that we want to have some people there. If we don't get what we need from them, we will introduce some legislation that would list who would be appointed.
Thank you.
And
that answers my question.
We can work with you on that, too. What do you think?
Okay.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Despite my landlocked counties, I would support a reference to consulting with the Coastal Caucus on the House and State Senate members to this committee.
Or their successor. I hope they exist forever, but...
Yeah, you never know how our caucuses will go. But,
We may not want to do that.
Actually, we feel pretty good. I mean, the issue is, I think everybody who lives on the coast has had experiences in one way or another with an invasive species coming to their area. And we don't want them. We like Oregon the way it is. We don't need to import them. The shippers have been pretty good about that, too. They aren't. That is not their purpose, to bring organisms back and forth. There's new technology being developed. They probably know that better than we do at times about what kinds of things we do. I don't want to get in the way of having new technology not be a part of it. And the task force keeps looking at that stuff so that we can find inexpensive ways to do it. That would be great. There's been everything from heating the ballast water before you put it out, to putting chemicals in it before you put it out. I mean, there's lots of discussions that have been happening already. We just need to do what's best for the environment in general and not have these things coming in. And none of us want the snail. We talked about that a while back. And that's just, we're spending a lot of money on the snail, and we haven't got any. I mean, I think about what happens if you get them. So,
further questions for this group? Okay. Thank you for coming. We'll look forward to your amendments and other conversations. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2714. Something else when we work on Eskimo, or do you think we?
If we've put in a call to get it to come back down here, and there are others.
Okay. There are, great. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2695. We've resummoned our good friend Representative Eskival, and in the meantime, we've got some other members of the public. And actually, you can identify yourself. The sheet will come, and I'd know who you are, but please just go ahead and start off.
Excuse me. For the record, my name is Alan Brickley. I'm an attorney. I'm employed by First American Title Insurance Company and with offices in downtown Portland. In order to explain what the purpose of this bill is, I need to perhaps give you a brief history with regard to recording. Several years ago, two county clerks in particular, and I was working with them, were trying to develop what I think would be properly described as a training aid or an assistance to the clerks who work on the desk. And the purpose was to identify various documents which would be normally received so that they could identify them quickly by title. We developed a list, and the law of unintended consequences took over. And that list no longer was a guide, but it became the Bible. So what happened in a number of situations after that was that if the document didn't fit in the guide, it wasn't approved or wasn't accepted by the recorder for recording purposes. Historically, county clerks would accept basically documents which would be submitted to them. They would index them. But now, at least some county clerks are in the taking the position that they need to review these documents and assure that they are legally sufficient and are statutorily acceptable. The purpose for this legislation is to make sure that all of the county clerks return to the sort of the historic precedents. And if a document is presented to them, regardless of what it's called, if it purports to affect an interest in real estate, it would be accepted and recorded. The most egregious example I think I can give of this was one that occurred last year, in which one of the people at a unnamed county clerk's office desk refused to accept a document because, in their opinion, the legal description was insufficient. I can tell you from my experience as an attorney for 38 years and being in this business for 48 years that in my legal opinion that the legal description in that document was clearly sufficient. I have made inquiry to the county council in particular, and they basically said, no, that's acceptable for the county clerk to do that. And to question the sufficiency of the legal description. So what I'm looking for, what we're asking for in this situation, is uniformity in terms of how these documents are treated across the state. There is an additional problem which I can anticipate, and that is the counties are really pushing for e-recording or electronic recording. I believe our industry would like it. I believe that the attorneys would like it. Anybody who is involved in the recording process would support and do support electronic recording. I think what the problem is going to be, though, is if we don't have something like this where there is a clear understanding as to the county clerk's responsibility in terms of accepting documents, as a practical matter, what's going to happen is when these electronic documents are submitted to the county clerk, they will not be able to review them all at the same time. They're probably going to be coming in a significant rush. They're going to look at them the next day. And then if the same, you know, mindset exists, they're going to say, they're going to contact whoever had submitted this electronically, I'm sorry, this document is not acceptable. When in our view or in the view of most people who are looking at it, the attorneys who drafted it, the lenders who have submitted it, it is an acceptable document. Then the problem will be, how do we fix this document after the money's been dispersed, after the, you know, the new buyers have moved in, after you know, a lot of legal issues have been resolved by these documents. So I think that's going to be a problem, particularly with e-recording in the future. So the purpose, as I say, is to try to return uniformly, not everybody does this, but uniformly return the county clerks to their function of accepting the documents as submitted. I know the Oregon Association of County Clerks do support this. I've talked to a couple of the people. I've received email. I think two of them are here today.
Got them on the list, yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't believe that it's a controversial bill.
We believe that about a lot of bills.
I think you might be right, but if I say that, I just cross everything.
I know, and I'm sorry I said that myself.
Yeah.
Representative Escobar, would you like to join us? Sure, the answer is actually probably no, but could you please join us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Escoville, Representative District 6. You know, I've been in the building a short period of time, you know, just since 2005 in the House, and this has been going on since I've walked in this door. It's kind of like Groundhog Day, you know, it returns and it returns and it returns. Kind of like fluoridation of water, you know. Everybody laughs.
That's a damn good bill, Representative.
It certainly is.
I think someone might make it through this committee.
I have had the occasion. I did a work
Representative
group.
Gilliam, please don't swear in the record.
wasn't it? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. Thank you.
I did have an occasion of the 2005 session to do a work group on this to try to get the clerks and the OLTA together to get some sort of an agreement, which was to no avail because they eventually quit meeting. In the interim, we didn't have authorization to have a committee, so therefore it kind of died on the vine. And then last session, we also grappled with this as well. But the example that Mr. Brickley brings out is a fine example. And I've reviewed the document, and it's very interesting. One would think that the one-third southern portion of a piece of property is pretty explicit. I've seen those descriptions over and over and over being a realtor when you pull up documents. In fact, easements, a lot of your easements are worded exactly like that. Well, what this interpretation was, well, it isn't meets and bounds. So in other words, I have to go from one corner, go up a third of the way, let's say it's a 100-foot piece of property, I have to go 33 feet 4 inches and then go to the east and go whatever the width of the property is, 100 feet if it's a lot, and then head south 33 feet 4 inches, and then back across 100 feet.
Is that what a meet is?
or a bound?
Meet and bounds.
I've heard the term. Is it an actual 33
meets and bounds,
or something?
Well, meets and bounds.
Oh, I just...
No, meets and bounds refers to the type of legal description.
Right.
You go from a point to a point.
Could be. I just wonder if it's...
So many feet, and then you go so many feet, and so on and so forth. That's a meet and bound. But what was interesting about it, it's still the same southern third of that piece of property, no matter how you look at it. So that was really the problem. It was an interpretation. And I can see the train wreck when we do get into electronic documentation of recordation of documents, and I've always pushed for recordation of documents electronically. But if we have a day or a two lapse before someone says, well, we have a problem here, how do you unclose? I know how to close a property. I just don't know how to unclose a property. So it could cause some real problems. So when we get to electronic recordation of documents, which is the most efficient way, which is a very expedient way to take care of our customers in the profession, then we need to think clearly on how we're going to approach that, because I can see where there could be some problems if there's a delay. But this will help shore this up as well.
I might add that when this was submitted to Legislative Council, I asked for a slightly different version of this bill, and I'd like to perhaps...
The first one who's had this happen to you, sir.
Have it amended slightly to essentially enlarge. Right now it's written so that the only way they can, the only prohibition is that they can't reject it based on title or attachments. And as I've already testified, I think the issue has become much larger than that. So I'd like to submit an amendment or resubmit my proposed language, which is somewhat broader. But
Yeah, we've got some time. I mean, unfortunately, our legislative council has to deal with people like me who on a crayon and a napkin send them an idea, and then they have to turn it in. So occasionally then they have to actually come look at the rest of the public's work, and it just isn't quite what we thought.
But sometimes they get good law.
Yeah, just not my laws usually aren't so good. Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, it is deja vu all over again. We have grappled with this in the past. So I understand what Southern Third means. Now, interestingly enough, we had the surveyors in here a little while ago. Now, is the required description of the physical property, the land, are you required to, when you do meets and bounds, are you required to find a longitude and latitude point and then describe a certain distance west?
Is
that how that works?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffler, all legal descriptions ultimately can be traced back to some public land corner that is recognized as an official corner. You may or may not see it within the four corners of a particular document, but as you trace it back, there will eventually be a public land corner which is referenced.
You may have followed.
Yeah, Representative Reskin was going to add
forgive me
on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, usually, especially in subdivisions, you have corner pins usually in place on your property itself on the lot. But when you get into the county, you have corner pins that are huge. They're great big brass pins, and you find those, and then you go off from there. But rural property is much more difficult to get your hands around than a surveyed subdivision. Survey subdivision is pretty simplistic, although some people have a tendency to put their fence on somebody else's property. That happens occasionally.
You spawned another something over there, I think, on the same that same related question.
I was going to follow up on that.
Okay, Representative Schott.
And that's in the clerk's defense... And I'm not saying we shouldn't do this, by the way. I think you make a logical, sensible argument here. And you trace back in the record, and here's the monument going off that. But unfortunately, I buy this piece of property. I think I'm buying this. And then I find, you trace back, and if there is a record or the record's wrong, then the question asked is, the southern third of what? How do we handle, if I'm articulating it enough for you to understand what the heck I'm saying, how do you handle that situation when, well, guess what? You don't own this southern sixth, and you thought you did. Now you're trying to describe the southern third, but the southern third all of a sudden moves up that lineup because you don't really own that. How do you deal with all that?
Well, look,
without that longitudinal,
right,
latitudinal description in your document.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffler, let me see if I can explain it this way. In this particular instance, it's actually a very good way to explain it. That referred to a specific lot in a subdivision. And it said the southerly one-third of lot, whatever it was, in the subdivision. Now, that subdivision, that legal description, doesn't refer to a government corner. However, if you actually went to the subdivision, it has a meets and bounds description of the entire boundary. In that legal description, it will refer back to a government land corner. So that's what I mean by,
right,
it's not in the four corners, but you can find it.
All right, it's in that context. In that context, then you drop down to the southern.
Exactly. That's correct. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Topper, even to the point where you have the township range section, subsection, and tax lot. So it breaks it down considerably so you know exactly where you're at. You could have that problem in a rural setting. If, let's say, you bought 460 acres out here, well, then it's your responsibility to have it surveyed, because you're buying the existing meets and bounds description and or description of that property, and it's probably been established for years and years and years, the fences and things of this nature, but actually it's recommended that if you have some sort of a inkling that you want to check that boundary, then it's usually the buyer's responsibility to have the place surveyed.
And that would occur often in a rural sort of setting?
Correct.
I'm just trying to find out how all these bills got sent here by the Speaker, and now I finally have at least a link. It's a rural community.
Well, I'm trying to connect it to forest land.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rowland. Thank you, Chair. I was... I don't get the chance to ask questions of Representative Escobar very often, and we aren't in many committees together, and so it's just a pleasure to have him here. So I just want, this is just for him. You don't have to answer this question.
Uh-oh.
If the property isn't lined up north and south and it said a third, how do you figure out where the third is?
No, that's very simplistic, because the southern section, you just go by your compass and you figure out north and south.
So if it's laying this way, north and south, and this is north and south.
You know, you can draw on that paper diagonally, third and a third.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure which third it was.
But usually in subdivisions, I haven't seen one that's been approached that way.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. We have one more witness. Any more questions for these two gentlemen?
Well, I just...
Oh, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. This is for Mr. Brickley, who I haven't seen for 30 years and didn't recognize. It's nice to see you.
Nice to
anyway,
see you.
The question is this a problem with the new division of lands, so that when you're having a subdivision, as opposed to what Representative Escobar said, that you've got established property that have exchanged hands over the years, and so it's pretty much established. So are we talking about new descriptions? Or any description?
Mr. Chair, Representative Van Orman, the bill itself doesn't really deal with legal descriptions as such. What it really deals with is the function and responsibility of the clerk to accept the document, so that the purpose is to suggest that the county clerk should simply accept the documents as prepared by the public members, whether it be attorneys, lenders, individuals, and not to check those legal descriptions, because they are not in a position to understand them or to verify them or to do anything else. I mean, that is simply not the function of the clerk. I use that as an example, as I say, at least in my mind, one of the more egregious examples where a document was rejected, where, at least in my opinion, there was no authority to do so, and because I believe that the legal description was sufficient.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to, I think, we have one more member of the public I want to get up here and testify. We have another bill that's really quite related, and I think they all came together. So I'm going to see if we can just get there still with our 14 remaining minutes. So with no more questions for you, gentlemen, your excuse, if you care to be.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Nice to see you.
Jan Coleman from the Oregon Association of County Clerks. You know, and Georgette Brown, also from the clerks, if you want to come up, just be here. You're the only person on our next bill, so we'll get to that, I think, fairly likely, hopefully.
Chair Klim, we are bringing James Morales from the Clerks Association.
Great.
Also. He joined us from another hearing.
Please.
Okay. Chair Klim, members of the committee, I'm Jan Coleman. I'm a retired county clerk and representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Actually, we came to support 2695. For the most part, we do want to see the amendment as written. For the most part, we feel that clerks are already doing this, but there have been some issues where there have been some problems in different counties, so we're trying to get all on the same page. As far as legal descriptions, I will tell you there are things that clerks have to do, look at in legal descriptions. A tax lot by itself, sometimes we get a document that has a tax lot number. That is not an acceptable legal description. It is stated so in the statute, and that is because the tax lot can change. For instance, I lived on a farm. We had a mortgage partition. When we mortgage partitioned, my farm remained one, the original tax lot, and the home and what was partitioned became another. So the original tax lot number no longer covered that original illegal. Okay, that's just an example. Another time I did get a recording for a college where the legal cited Building 4, Building 5. That's never going to fly with somebody because those building numbers can change. So just to tell you, we do get some of those things, that, and we do have to make that type of a determination. James, you have a few words?
Sure. Okay, Chair Klim, members of the committee, James Morales, Benton County Clerk. Still, Benton County Clerk, but also on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. As written, House Bill 2695 does address the title of the document, that the clerk cannot reject based on the title as long as the document is, as the bill reads, required or permitted by law to be recorded. So as long as it's required or permitted by law, we do have things we look for: notarization, legal description, and there are guidances in the statute to what is an acceptable legal description. Sometimes we run into documents that are faxes, poor quality, that aren't going to be reproducible for permanent records, which we are required to retain. And so we still have some standards that we are going to be implementing at the point of recording. So it's not to say that everything that is submitted to the county clerk's office is going to be accepted for recording, because we have a job to do. If we accepted everything, that could cause problems on down the line, like where the assessor needs to take every document we accept and take a look at it and see if it flies or not, you know, in the record, if it's the right persons that are conveying interest and that type of thing. So we do have a job to do. We believe what this does say is that if it is authorized and permitted, you know, we must take it, and we're fine with that. If it's good to go, you know, we say we don't have any problem with this bill. The amendment, I'm not sure. I don't know what that says. I haven't seen it. Would want to take a look at it, but we support this bill as written. And then there are ways to deal with titles that aren't standard titles. Where we could have them add a cover sheet or whatever the case might be, so that we actually know how to index it into our databases. So that's kind of where we're at on it. If you have any questions, you know, be happy to. Did you want to?
No, I'm with
you. She's on a different bill.
Okay.
Any questions for these two on this bill, Representative Shaw?
Only to say it's that down the line, and I'm sure everyone is concerned about it. A property purchaser or owner you know, something comes up, well, I have this document that was accepted and recorded, and it says I own a southern third or whatever. I have great respect for that concern about what's going to happen down the line after this has been recorded. So that I definitely, and our good man back here is nodding his head yes, so thank you, Mr. Chair.
Where's that problem?
Yeah, and I guess my only concern when I was looking at this bill is that are we going to get into problems as we do other things like TDRs and others so that we're doing transferable rights, and so all of a sudden this one, it needs to be recorded so that posterity knows if I buy this land, I'm never going to build on it because I've given that away to this place. And so we're doing new things out there in the landscape in trying to make sure that XYZ happens and people agree to that at one point, and it needs to be there. Because I think one of the problems that we've had in our area in particular is that we lost track of some of the things with the submersible lands and whether the state owned them. So we've got deeds out there that don't indicate any state ownership, and yet somewhere it wasn't. I mean, so now we have these conflicts that are happening all the time. So doing it and getting the right stuff on it is very important, and mm-hmm. things change over time.
Correct.
As to what kinds of things are important. We didn't even talk about TDRs before, so I don't want the county clerks and whatever to say, no, we aren't going to do this when we put stuff in. So I like the idea of the bill. I just want to make sure that it's right, and I guess that's what I'm talking about.
Yes, Representative Roblin, Chair Clam, members of the committee. To address that type of concern, I mean, once again, we go back to things that are authorized or required under statute, and when we're talking about documentation coming from the state or a city's political subdivision of the state and the special districts, there is statutes in there that say these guys bring us a document to record that's on behalf of the needs of that particular political subdivision of the state of Oregon, then we do accept those documents for recording. So we have guidelines that guide us, guide the process, and we feel that we have very, very good guidelines. And we think that this would feed well into that to say, okay, if there's authorization, record it. If the clerk doesn't know what the authorization is, the recording party is free to say, hey, look, here's where my authorization comes from, and then the clerk would then be required to accept. But if nobody can find authorization, what is this trying to do? I have no idea. This is a document I've never seen before. It's perfectly normal for a clerk and whoever's trying to record to say, what is the authorizing statute or what is the process you're trying to complete here? Is this really a deed? Is that what it is? So that I can get this into our database correctly, that type of thing.
Great. I don't know if you two want to stay on the other bill or not, but you certainly can or can't, or don't have to.
Sure.
I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2695 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2560. And our one witness is Georgette Brown.
For the record, I am Georgette Brown. I'm a former Josephine County clerk, retired clerk. And our cornerstone preservation fee is only $4, by the way.
Thank you.
And it was only put in place 2 years ago. Okay, anyway, I'm here to talk about House Bill 2560. And this is one that was also approved by the Oregon Association of County Clerks. And a certified copy of a document is a document that has a sticker on it that says this certifies that it is the exact copy of what is filed in the clerk's office. So therefore, the reasoning for not wanting a certified copy to be altered in any way and brought for re-recording.
Sure.
And what I've passed around there, I think you've seen, is the cover sheet that is being required, or something similar to this cover sheet, so that the certified copy could be recorded along with the cover sheet, which would indicate whatever change needs to be made on the document. If a name was incorrectly spelled or the consideration might have been a little bit different or something like that, if there's a correction needed. And often when people want to record a certified copy, it's because they haven't been able to find their original, and that's what happens. But we wanted to have this bill so that we'd have, again, uniform application throughout the counties, because occasionally some of the clerks have taken in altered certified copies, you know, to re-record sometimes a new clerk or a little pressure from a constituent, that kind of thing. So this would take care of that situation and standardize.
Standardize the process.
Mm-hmm.
Common sense bill.
Any questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Georgia, thank you for being here. Would this be county-wide?
Yes.
So all counties, this is suggested.
So all the counties would be doing the same thing.
Right.
And no one would be taking a re-recording on a certified copy.
And the Clerks Association obviously endorses this. One last follow-up.
Yep.
Georgette, I hate to bring this up, but was that your phone that went off?
I meant to say when I first sat down that I apologize. That's a brand new phone. I didn't even recognize the ring.
It's fine this time. We try to keep a decorum in here.
Yes.
He wants to know if you can beam the ringtone over onto his phone. That's all he really is.
No, I was really embarrassed because I meant to turn it off, and I meant to apologize first thing.
Don't find people in this committee for that the way they apparently do in some other committee. Oh, boy. Well, this has been a wonderful day. Oh. I'm going to close the public hearing on this was House Bill 2560. Thank you for watching the entire episode. And I'm going to close the public hearing and adjourn our committee.